We're going to call to order the meeting of the Senate Committee on Education, and I'm going to give just a little bit of instruction before, and hopefully the rest of my members will start wandering in about this time. So we're going to open at the beginning two of our bills, because we have one of our people who are testifying that has to catch an airplane in a fairly short period of time. Since we started 15 minutes late, it made it almost impossible to get there. So we'll take some testimony on Senate Bill 214 at the very beginning, and I thank Senator Devlin for graciously accepting the fact that we may let him wait here just a little bit longer while we do that. And so the other thing we said is there's a number of people who want to testify, so we will be using our timer today. So if you can, two things: keep your limited testimony to a couple minutes. We won't do it on the one person we're asking to come up out of order, but in general we're going to try to keep testimony to people down to a couple minutes, and if you have written testimony, we'd like to take that. It all becomes part of the record, and so I just want to keep that going. We may not get to our final bill. We'll let you know as we get closer, just because of time, and we know there's a lot of people who want to testify on that one as well, so we will have another public hearing on that to make sure that people have a chance to testify. And in all of our meetings, when there are people who sign up that say they're over 100 miles away, they get preference, because we don't want to make them have to come back the next day. So with that, I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 135 and a public hearing on Senate Bill 214. We'll hear a short I don't think we need to even have an explanation. With that, I am going to go out of order and call Carmen Rubio up to testify on Senate Bill 214.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the Education Committee. My name is Carmen Caballero Rubio, and I'm here in my role as the Executive Director of the Latino Network. Latino Network is a Latino youth and family-serving organization in Multnomah County, and we provide programs in early childhood, academic supports, and parent and family engagement. I'm here to express my support for the Age 3 to Grade 3 Literacy Initiative, which aligns families, communities, and schools for children's reading success. For more than a year, along with my staff, allies, and our families, we have been investing our time, advice, and community voice into the development of this critical initiative. This collaboration will provide much-needed support to students through the important school transition time of pre-kindergarten through the K-12 system by providing full-day kindergarten programs for all children and through the development of strong partnerships among districts and community-based organizations and early learning hubs around the state. We believe this initiative will have tremendous impacts on the hardest-to-reach populations, in part because of its valuing of parents and community-based organizations as critical education partners of schools and teachers. We know this because we've experienced it firsthand. Young Latinos as a segment of the population is growing faster than any other, and at the same time still face significant disparities in education and life, with notably higher rates of poverty, unemployment, teen pregnancy, and incarceration. Particularly vulnerable are low-income immigrant parents and students at risk of school disengagement. Youth with low grades, high absenteeism, or disciplinary actions have failed a class, experienced housing instability, or have changed schools frequently. All are indicators of decreased success in school. In the next 10 years, Latinos will be a significant part of the economic base in Oregon. Yet this growth far outpaces our educational institutions' ability to be appropriately responsive. This is why the 3-to-3 initiative is a timely and important step toward building a new education model for today's students, not just for Latino youth, but all children in Oregon. Our current models are leaving too many students behind, and these are the students whose families are currently being served by multiple organizations. Most district demographics across the state are drastically changing, and it's our charge to envision a newer and more effective way to close the literacy gap, ways that place equal value on the learning that happens in school, in the home, and in supportive community organizations. Parents and families are an asset to schools. Research study after study states that parent involvement and self-confidence are critical factors in a youth's educational success. And speaking Spanish in the home is a plus. Bilingualism has been linked to stronger cognitive abilities and is also competitive and sought after today in today's world. When parents are equipped to become successful teachers and leaders within their own families, generations of future Oregonians are impacted. And the good news is that partnerships like the ones 3-3 calls for are working right now. Some individual districts are already partnering with culturally specific providers to bridge the cultural impasses that may exist in their districts and create capacity within the schools to fully engage families of color. One of these examples is our partnership with Portland Public Schools, one with Reynolds, and also Park Grove School District, to provide our program Juntos Aprendemos, which means Together We Learn, which engages parents early, before their children enter school. Juntos Aprendemos brings Latino children ages 3-5 and their parents into the neighborhood school for 30 weeks to develop the early literacy, early math, and social-emotional skills necessary for success in kindergarten. Meanwhile, their parents learn skills to support their children's early learning at home, participate actively in their children's school, and develop healthy parent-child communication practices, and promote their child's positive cultural identity. Our children leave Juntos ready to learn in kindergarten with literacy readiness skills at 95% and above. Parents exit armed with knowledge about how to support literacy development in the home and in the school. Culturally specific programs do make a difference. Parents report on the positive effects on their children's confidence, attendance, and enthusiasm for education. And parents are hungry for opportunities to connect with schools and school leadership and teachers in a manner that values their engagement, values their history, and their language. So much, in fact, that we often have waiting lists for our school-based literacy programs. One father, his name is Genaro, determined to access literacy supports for his daughter, Itzel, came faithfully week after week to our Juntos Aprendemos program at Glenfair School in East Portland after being told that the program was full. He would come every week with his daughter, dressed up with her hair in braids, holding her hand as they waited together outside the portable classroom in the rain, hoping a spot would open up every single week. We were eventually able to accommodate him and his daughter, and now they're among our most active families. School community partnerships are a formula that works. Our outcomes prove that in our case, and the Age 3 to Grade 3 initiative gives all Oregon communities the same opportunity to narrow the literacy gap and invest in the unlimited potential of every child. So on behalf of all the families we work with, all our advocates, and the children, I urge you to please support this important initiative moving forward. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, have a safe flight.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. So with that, we've already opened the hearing, so we're going to start back on Senate Bill 135. And our chief sponsor, Senator Devlin, and is Representative Buckley probably not here, so... Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Richard Devlin, Senate District 19, for giving this opportunity to speak in support of Senate Bill 135, which changes the way the Department of Education pays for the cost of educating students in eligible day treatment programs and eligible residential treatment programs. These programs are long-term care and treatment programs that provide education services to those students with mental health or severe disabilities. They're in numerous facilities throughout this state, and we are actually talking somewhere in the neighborhood on average in any year of about 900 or 1,000 children. Those of you that have been on education committees in the past few years, and those of you that have been on the subcommittee on education in Ways and Means, know that this is an issue that has dogged those committees for 3 years trying to resolve the issue. In 2011, the responsibility of educating children in long-term care and treatment facilities was changed from the Oregon Department of Education to the school district in which the facility was located. When that change was made, language on contracting maintaining that funding for the facilities to flow to districts through a contract One of the things that this did is it actually put ODE in the position of the school district, in the position of the ESD, in the position of potentially in some cases the actual provider of the services, in the position of negotiating contracts. And that sounds easy, but I will tell you the reality of this is somewhere in creating that bureaucracy, somehow the 900 children or 1,000 children were forgotten. Because the reality of it is ODE has to spend an enormous amount of time, districts have to spend an inordinate amount of time, ESDs have to spend an inordinate amount of time negotiating contracts for these services. And what this bill actually does, and I think you will hear later from many of the parties involved in this, particularly some of the advocates for these children and the Oregon Department of Education, that the proposal we're putting forward, we believe, will address this issue. This is an issue that was extensively discussed by the Task Force on School Funding. It's one of their recommendations that this be moved from the type of proposal that it is now, or the process that it is now, where you're determining contracts by each individual school district that has a facility to a grant and aid program. We believe by doing that, that these programs will have an adequate level of funding to meet their educational needs. That is something that has been clearly lacking for a number of years since we have changed the process, and may have been lacking prior to that. Our discussions actually have led to a belief that what is actually needed is a grant and aid program that guarantees that by best practices these children are in classrooms that meet best practices standards for their needs. In some cases that will require additional resources. The co-chairs of the Joint Ways and Means Committee have already put those additional resources within their framework and within the Department of Education to ensure that these children actually receive the educational resources that they are entitled to. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we are not talking about an enormous amount of resources here, since we are talking about a modification in how a program is being administered, and we are also talking in terms of 900 to 1,000 children. But it is remarkable to me the amount of time that it has taken in this building to address this issue, and the amount of time that education committees in the House, education committees in the Senate, my subcommittee on education, my two subcommittee chairs, Representative Buckley and myself, have spent on this issue, and we are hoping for a resolution of it. In fact, praying for a resolution of it. And I think the resolution of it is the bill before you, which will have a few amendments which other people will speak to.
Thank you.
Yes.
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you. Senator Devlin, what percent of the funding for, because these are Medicaid kids too, and so I'm assuming the majority of the funding for the facilities is Medicaid funding, is that correct?
Yes, actually, what we're speaking about here in terms of long-term care and treatment, because the name, once you hear it, you think of the mental health side. It's the program within the Department of Ed, so it's actually the educational costs. The long-term care and treatment costs are borne in other budgets, not the education budget, so there is no...
Okay, but this... putting this money in doesn't jeopardize the Medicaid funding in any way?
No.
Okay.
Any other questions for Senator Devlin? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for your opportunity. In my judgment, the only thing that it risks is a potential another lawsuit, because somehow these children are being lost between the cracks, and I believe this bill will help us to make sure that they get the educational services they deserve.
We've been there, haven't we?
Yeah.
So with that, we will invite up Mitch Kurska, Jan McComb, and Inga Deckert. Did you want to come up, Inga? Okay.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Jan McComb with the Department of Education, and with me is Mitch Kurska, who oversees the long-term care and treatment programs at the department. Senator Devlin did a great background on the bill, so I won't repeat that. What this bill does is make ODE and school district practice align with the 2011 policy that school districts are responsible for providing the education services to long-term care and treatment students. Money for the program will flow from the department directly to school districts like they get their regular state school funds. Not only does this eliminate costly, time-consuming contracting overseen by the Department of Justice, but school districts will have the funds up front. Without these time-consuming contracts, ODE should have more time to provide technical assistance to districts, ESDs, and the actual programs. It will not change our ability to intervene if we believe school districts are not passing through the money to providers in a timely way. And especially as this law first takes effect, we'll be monitoring that closely. Nothing in Senate Bill 135 prevents a school district from contracting with an ESD to provide the services. It just really clarifies who is responsible for these services. When we started digging into this last summer, there seemed to be a lot of confusion about who was responsible. And I think in the end, that hurt the kids the most. And so this clarifies that practice. There's a Dash 1 amendment, and we support that. That just corrects, I think, an incorrect citation in the law. And then there were some concerns raised a few days ago by ESDs. They like how they're contracting right now with the school districts. And so if you wanted to address that concern, there are amendments that haven't been drafted yet, but alleviate their concerns and at the same time keep the main purpose of the bill, which would allow a school district to delegate the allocation of funds to pay for education services to another district or ESD if it wanted to do so.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Okay. Do you wish to speak to the?
No.
Oh, you're just there.
I don't wish to add anything.
You're just there to help with them. Does that answer the question we had before?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I am interested in that additional amendment that has not yet been drafted because those would be my districts that have raised that concern.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
Mr. Just for clarification, the school districts still have the responsibility, but you're taking care of the money side of it. Is that roughly what we're doing here? So they don't have to deal with that. They can just deal with providing the services.
Chair Roblin, Senator Cruz, this gives school districts the option of referring to us.
Right.
But it's still their responsibility for the education, and so it's up to them to decide how that will be best carried out.
Okay. So they could still contract if they chose to. Okay.
So another clarification might be, if in fact the only program in the state that was available happened to be in Portland and I'm still in Goose Bay, they could contract with Portland to provide the service. They would get the pass-through money to go to wherever it needed to go.
Right.
Absolutely.
That is correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. We have two others, possibly three. So we have Janet Arnez and Rebecca Roth, and I'll give one more opportunity for our good friend Inga, if she wants to come up. And whoever wants to start.
I'll start, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. Caught me off guard because I didn't sign up to testify, but I'm happy to
be
here this afternoon.
You were on our list of people who were interested. So.
So for the record, Inga Deckert, I'm here today on behalf of the Child Center, which is a psychiatric day treatment center for children located in Springfield, Oregon, and I've been working with that facility and many others for several years now, several sessions on the issue of long-term care and treatment education. So we really appreciate Senator Devlin bringing this bill forward and spending the amount of time that he and several other legislators have taken over the years to work out issues with this program. It's a very small program, as Senator Devlin mentioned. It's a fairly small number of children relative to the number of children that are receiving K through 12 public education in the state, but it's an important group of children, and this is an important program, and we appreciate all the time and effort toward it. So with that, I will say we're supportive of Senate Bill 135 and the amendments that are being brought forward. I know we don't have the amendment that was brought, the concerns were raised from one of Senator Gelser's constituents. We don't have that amendment before us, but conceptually we're supportive of that as well. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Inga? Nope. So whoever wants to go next.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. I'm Janet Ahrens. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs. We're a statewide nonprofit representing $223 million worth of services for over 100,000 children. We also represent about 64% of all the long-term care and treatment providers, and attached to a packet are the indicators of who all those members are. You'll recognize many of them, I'm sure. Extremely happy to be able to be here today to testify in support of 135 and the amendments. I just wanted to comment to Senator Gelser that it was Trillium who offered up the amendments, and the department has gone out of their way to address those concerns. So we're looking forward to the actual language. Thank you. We're also very happy with how the department engaged with providers over this process. Open invitations to participate, transparency, responsive. Mitch, Sam, and Jan, all three were the sort of on-the-ground team who did a lot of work with providers, and we're very pleased with that. And, of course, the actual product that Senator Devlin spoke to, and I have to reiterate what Inga said, we're deeply grateful to the senator and other legislators who've made this a big priority over the last 3 years, just as Inga and I and our organizations have as well. So just to tell you just a little tiny bit about who these kids are that Senator Devlin was talking about, there are about 1,000 children. 43% of them are children of color. 94% of them are in poverty so significant that they're on free and reduced lunches, and 99% of them are in treatment services provided by Medicaid because of the poverty in their families. And most of you have heard also about the Adverse Childhood Experiences study that's been done of 10 possible experiences in, that children could have experienced in their homes. If you have a score of 4 or more, you're moved into a pipeline for chronic social ills and chronic physical health ills. And the study of all of our children who are in long-term care and treatment, 68% of them have a score of 5 or more. So these are children who really need the education support to be able to achieve as their other counterparts do. So with the passage of this bill and its amendments, our next step is just to ensure with Ways and Means the opportunity to be able to treat these children equally with all the other children in Oregon who are in classrooms, to achieve parity amongst the long-term care and treatment providers, and to fund education for graduation for these children. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, I'm Rebecca Roth from South Salem, and I've heard several people saying that they need this program because we have, the first one said that there's a huge number of Mexicans coming into our
different bill.
What?
That was a different bill. That's the next bill. This bill is, I went to that one ahead of time.
Oh,
this bill,
okay.
This bill is about
okay.
Students that need outside of the classroom.
Okay, I didn't understand that.
Right.
Okay.
That's right.
All right. So I'll address that with the next bill.
Okay.
Okay. I just went to a hearing about the Oregon Education Investment Board and heard testimony a couple weeks ago that money isn't making it into the classrooms because it's being given to groups that the Oregon Education Investment Board chooses. So this is a board that's
And I'll tell you, that's not germane to this one because this one has nothing to
do. I'm using that as a point because my point is that over my entire lifetime, I have seen the government do this over and over, promise that the money will go one place and it actually goes someplace else. And so this, when I went to this testimony of this investment board, these are people that we don't get to choose who are on the board. We don't get to choose how the money is spent. And in the end, the money doesn't go where we want it to go. And several years ago, there was $250 million stolen from the education fund to fund health care. So money just moves around all over the place, and it doesn't necessarily go where we're promised it will go. And when I just came in the Capitol building, I just looked up at that saying by Jefferson, and he said that the state is the people, and if the people are full of vice, that then the state will be full of vice. And so he says if the people are full of righteousness, then there will be righteousness. And I urge you to go read that and think about it, because we need people that are going to run the government in a way that it doesn't take over our lives, and it also is run in a righteous manner. The money, as far as I can tell, is being shunted into these groups like the OEIB, where we don't have any say about the way it's spent, and I feel that once this is passed, that's going to happen again, that all these people that want money for the actual kids are not going to ever see what they're being promised.
Thank you for your testimony. I will say that this is one of those bills that you may, if you really look at it and see it, corrects that, because it makes sure the money follows the kids directly to the services that they need. So I thank you for your
testimony. That's another promise. I'm not sure
okay,
if I
we'll
believe.
We'll have to watch. Any other questions for any of the members?
Is this it for this? I can say this, Mr. Chair, this bill, looking at the sponsor list, may have a reasonable chance in Ways and Means.
I would say that's probably true. So thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify for Senate Bill 135? Okay, come on up.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for your record, Lori Wimmer representing Oregon Education Association. We were part of the work group that created the bill before you today, and I have nothing elegant to say, just wanted to let you know that we support this.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Doug Riggs. I just want to say that this is part of a large work group that, as Lori mentioned, has been undertaking a pretty intense study of this issue for the last 2 or 3 years. This has been an issue that's gone back about 4 sessions, as you well know. So we really appreciate not only the advocates working with us today, but also the department, which has really dived into this and tried to figure out the best way to make sure that these kids are taken care of. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. I guess last one more time. Is there anybody else that didn't sign up that would like to speak to 135? If not, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 135. We had a possible work session. We have some amendments that are not here, so we will be waiting for those.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can I just clarify,
yes,
do I need to submit those amendments? Are they going in through
the committee
administrator?
I think they're already submitted.
Have they been submitted?
They're not in?
Yes, Jan, come on up.
Okay.
We'll get them taken care of.
We'll get it taken care of.
Thank
we will make sure they're done. Good question. Thank you. We've already opened the public hearing on Senate Bill 214. Do you want to give a short explanation while Rob Saxton, Megan Irwin, come on up?
And Maxine Golden.
Oh, and Maxine?
Nancy Golden.
Oh, and Maxine Golden. That's right. Over to the side. Thanks.
Chair Roveland, members of the committee, Senate Bill 214, as introduced, requires school districts to implement an early reading program in order to claim full funding weight for full-day kindergarten. This bill does not currently have a subsequent referral. It may have a fiscal and revenue impact, but statements have not been issued at this time, and we're not considering amendments at this time.
Okay.
Chair Roveland, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Nancy Golden, and I'm the Chief Education Officer. I'm here to talk about Senate Bill 214, which I believe is an investment with unprecedented potential to dramatically and proactively leverage existing resources and once and for all close the opportunity gap. The most effective investment in education begins today with our youngest Oregonians. We all know that children are our future, and the best way to ensure a lifelong success for the students is to maximize the investment by starting at birth. This investment ensures that the gaps between children don't develop, and in the rare cases that there are gaps, that they're closed before kindergarten. The opportunity gap represents our single greatest untapped source of creativity, innovation, and meaningful contribution in our state. Closing the achievement gap to me is a moral imperative. This investment is highly integrated. It promotes child's health and wellness from birth. It promotes stable and attached families. It promotes high-quality early learning environments and early intervention, all key ingredients to preparing children to develop socially and emotionally and to be ready for school. We all know that if you're ready for kindergarten, then you're on track to read proficiently by third grade, which we also all know is the single greatest predictor of lifelong success. Many of the components of this proposal were generated by a group we refer to as the Reading Equity Summit. We met twice for a very long period of time each time. The educators and community leaders were from across the state. People have been successful in closing the opportunity gap. We learned from urban and rural communities alike about effective practices, which are evidence-based reading programs, parent engagement, working with community-based organizations, and ensuring the use of culturally specific practices. So this proposal reflects a departure from the traditional four walls of a child care center or a school. It's about a larger system with intentional partnerships, including parents, community-based organizations, and our educational entities. This investment galvanizes communities about what matters most, and that is third grade reading. The components of this proposal are interdependent. Each investment leverages and builds on the next. We know that Ready for Kindergarten equals third grade reading proficiency. We know that prevention and asset building is the greatest investment we can make. To me, it really doesn't get any better than that. So I will turn it over to Rob Saxton and Megan Irwin, who are going to give you details. First, we're starting with Megan, right, who are going to give you details of this bill.
Thanks, Nancy. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Megan Irwin, and I'm the Acting Early Learning System Director at the Department of Education. And we're here today to talk about the Age 3 to Grade 3 Literacy Initiative, which is something that I am personally absolutely thrilled to support. Because in Oregon, we're starting to think about the first 8 years of a child's life comprehensively. And that's really important because learning does not start on the first day of kindergarten. And if we're ever going to reach our goals for school readiness, third grade reading, and ultimately high school graduation, we really have to start to create a stronger alignment between what happens before kindergarten and what happens after. There's a growing recognition in light of significant evidence that if we want children to read on grade level by third grade, starting at kindergarten is too late. We have 8 years from the time a child's born until they graduate from third grade to focus on vocabulary, language acquisition, self-regulation, and then, of course, as children get older, formal reading skills. And Senate Bill 214 gives us the chance to connect what happens in the early years of life to what happens in the early grades of elementary school in a way that we never have in this state before. And we know that this is more than just a good idea. This is something that works. We're seeing in small pockets around the state that that's true. Through early learning hubs partnering with school districts to begin some parts of this work, we've seen real progress for 9,000 children who are participating in school transition programs or in programs where curriculum and professional development has been aligned across preschool and early elementary school. We're seeing that children participating in this program, it's called the Kindergarten Partnership and Innovation Program, are outperforming the state average on the kindergarten assessment. In fact, in one program out in Eastern Oregon, we've also seen the Latino-white achievement gap close at kindergarten entry for children participating in a program that has almost all of the component parts of the literacy initiative as part of it. This is an investment that builds on work that we've done over the last biennium to build an education system that's cohesive, aligned, and pointed toward what works best for young learners. On the early side of the equation, this investment does four really critical things. First, it connects standards in a developmentally appropriate way for early language and literacy development that happens in early childhood programs to standards for literacy in kindergarten through third grade, which will provide children with a cohesive educational experience. Second, it provides children the opportunity to participate in kindergarten transition programs in the summer before kindergarten, which again we've seen really work when it comes to school readiness. Third, it puts the power to make these gains in the hands of communities, building on investments that we've made in community-based coordinating infrastructure through the early learning hubs and community-based organizations. And then fourth, it facilitates a very warm handoff between early learning programs and the start of formal school, again, in a way that we've never done at scale in this state before. And so in the interest of a warm handoff with those remarks, I will hand it off to Rob to finalize this part of our presentation.
Thank you, Megan. Chair Roble, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Saxton, Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction. I'll keep my comments as brief as possible today because I know there are a bunch of people here who are actually out doing this work, and I know you want to hear from them and their expertise. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 214, H3 to Grade 3 Literacy Initiative. On my first slide, Megan really covered the first two comments around strengthening the handoff between early learning and K-12, and truly this is an opportunity for us to create some resources that does that in a very real and tangible way. And to create a cohesive system. And then the important professional development parts for all education providers, both in early learning and in K-12, around these issues, standards, methodology for literacy instruction, and also self-regulation. You'll see in here full-day kindergarten is an important component of this, and making sure that the full-day kindergarten that we have is robust and has a strong literacy focus. It creates partnerships for summer school and after school program with community-based organizations, hubs, and school districts, and then focuses on high leverage, evidence-based best practices in literacy that would be delivered by all of the partners in this work. Currently in the state of Oregon, 66.4% of our third graders read at grade level. And it is a number that it's not acceptable and that just is not going to get us where we need to be as far as 40-40-20 goes or really for the health of our state or for our students. And if you look at the numbers here, that this is broken out by disaggregation, and you can see that some of our other populations besides the totality of the population, which I mentioned earlier, American Indian, Alaska Native at 54.7%, Black at 49.8%, Hispanic at 45.5%. And so the achievement gaps are real and persistent, and we cannot overcome those without a robust program. This literacy initiative would ensure that students are more likely to graduate from high school. In fact, third grade readers are four times more likely to graduate from high school. The target is to have 90 to 95% of all third graders reading at grade level by the end of third grade. And that really was how we began the design of this program, is to say, what would it take to get there? And let's design something that actually causes that to happen. It's true that we could take a look at this and figure out how to parse this out with smaller resources or smaller amounts of resources in various places, but the bottom line is you can't get to 90 to 95% of your third graders reading at grade level with a $2 million investment or a $4 million investment or a $6 million investment. We've had great success at the Department of Education supporting low-performing schools with our focus and priority work. And if 50% of our students in our focus and priority schools are currently reading at grade level in the third grade, and we're incredibly successful, and we get 90% of those third graders to read at grade level in the 80 schools that we're supporting, we'll see a change of 3% more students statewide meeting or exceeding. We'll go from 66 to 69% of third graders reading at grade level. That does not move the dial the way we need to move the dial. The only way to cause this to happen is for a fully implemented, robust program that touches every child age 3 to grade 3 in the entire state. And when we are able to implement that, we can get it done. Lastly, we know that if we don't do anything, we're going to continue to have literacy programs in the state that basically are predictable based on race and that have absolutely no change in outcomes for students. We'll have the same percentage of students meeting or exceeding on third grade reading that we do currently, which is roughly 66%. When we implement really strong evidence-based literacy programs, we see that we have achievement gains, and it's achievement gains on the part of all students, and we can disaggregate that, and we'll still have evidence of achievement gaps. But when we really get involved deeply in highly effective, culturally relevant teaching practices and curricular practices, and we involve CBOs, parents, and organizations who are experts in this work, we can actually deliver an evidence-based literacy program designed specifically to close achievement gaps, and we can close the achievement gaps. And in fact, you can't get to 95% of students in the state reading at third grade grade level and still have achievement gaps. So we have to approach it that way to get this done, and we believe this program will do that. I'd be happy to answer questions. Thank you.
So any, yes, Senator Cano.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy, I think you are an expert in this area and also a really nice guy. But I had a visit. You knew there was a butt in there, didn't you? I had a visit from some parents who are really concerned about dyslexia. And I just wondered how your program works with that, because I don't know the exact numbers. I just know that there is a significant portion of kids who are having trouble learning to read. And I would suggest that you probably won't make it to your goal if that's not addressed either. And so maybe I missed it when I was out of the room, but could you address that?
Certainly. Chair Roland, Senator Knope, thank you for the question. Actually, yes, very much so. I try to stay away from educationalese, but I'll throw a little piece of it in here. This program would develop something that we called multi-tiered systems of support. MTSS is what educators talk about. And the idea is that there's an early screener when students show up at school that gives you an idea about how well they currently read, and if they're not reading well, that helps identify what the issue is. Is it around phonemics, letter identification, sound segmentation? There's a whole bunch of different components, including dyslexia. And if there is, then you're able to identify it and apply a program specifically to that student that would help them overcome it with what I would call an intervention. When I say multi-tiered system of support, it is that identification for the individual child and then a design of instructional program that will help them make progress as a reader.
I'm fine, thank you.
Thank you. The way this bill is written, it indicates that the money you're going to get the second half wait for a full-day kindergarten is contingent on having a program in place. Is that consistent with the way you're envisioning this happening, along with some extra money on top of that, I believe?
Chair Roblin, thank you for the question. I think that is the way that was originally written, and that is not the intent, and that there'll be some amendments that would say if you offer full-day K, you would be able to do a literacy program, and if you choose not to offer full-day K, you still are able to do a literacy program. You just have to tell us why you can't do full-day kinder, and then it would, I believe, the way that we proposed the amendment, then it would take approval of the state board to deliver the full-day program in your district.
Any other questions for this group? Nope. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Because there is a large number, our group of people who want to testify, we are going to use our deal for the first time and try to keep people with about 2 minutes of testimony. And so with that, we'll start with Mary Alice Russell, Craig Sproles, and Lisa Harnish-Jews. You want to come on up, too? We'll have all three of you. Is Lisa here? I didn't see Lisa. So I'll leave that. Whenever you're ready.
Just go right ahead.
Chair Roblin, I'm Craig Sproles. I'm a principal in the Greater Albany School District at Liberty Elementary. And I'm honored to be here to speak on support of the age 3 to grade 3 early learning initiative. I've been a principal in three different school districts, and I've seen the power of early learning and really focusing and concentrating on that group of kids to be able to enable them to be successful in elementary school. As an elementary principal, I really feel that it's my moral and professional imperative to make sure that kids read by the third grade. Lots of my teachers take on this imperative as well. It feels at times like it's a race to get them to read by that time, and the time we have is short to be able to do that. We all know that the reason why they need to read for third grade is because it is a predictor of success in school and success in life in a lot of ways. However, if it's a race, not all children start that race at the same starting point, and that's the difficult thing. Children not exposed to a rich learning environment come to school behind the starting line of other kids who have been exposed to that. Some researchers have shown that there's a 30 million word vocabulary gap between kids who come from more affluent homes and kids who come from less affluent homes. So when they get to kindergarten, they're not starting at the same spot. through Herculean effort on part of the kids and on part of the teachers, a lot of times that gap is closed, and then it falls over the summer as well. So for that reason, I want to be able to make sure that all kids start at the same point and are successful, and we can really maximize the effects of full day K through the 3-to-3 initiative. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Senator Roblin and committee, thanks so much again. I too am honored to be here to testify before you in support of the 3-to-3 literacy initiative. I'm Mary Alice Russell, the superintendent of McMinnville School District. We've been experiencing a number of successes with our children in McMinnville schools, certainly relative to measures that are done on a statewide level. And our subpopulations have been outperforming the state by double digits consistently for the last couple of years. We believe much of that has to do with the practice of adults in the school system and making sure that the individuals in the school system are implementing highly effective research-based instructional strategies and then are taking a look at how students are learning relative to the content and knowledge standards they need to know. But I want to share with you just a couple of the programs we have in place to support our children before they come to us in kindergarten. Ready for Kindergarten is a program that we implemented. We're in our fourth year and is in partnership with community-based service clubs. Ready for Kindergarten program is free to families, children from birth to five. So a parent can come to sit in a class with her first, with her one-year-old, second-year-old, and so on. We provide daycare during the evening of the training, and in addition, we provide families with a bag of new, high-quality, developmentally appropriate books and toys designed to foster healthy child development. We have a variety of volunteers who come from our schools and our community who teach these classes, the Ready for Kindergarten classes. 36% of the families served in our Ready for Kindergarten program are English learners, and 60% are Hispanic. 13% have children with disabilities, and 100% are economically disadvantaged. And despite multiple factors that place them at academic risk, we found that our four-year-olds who participated in the Ready for Kindergarten program last year performed 25% above state average on letter names and 52% above state average on letter sounds, and 2.5% above state average on numbers and operations on this fall's Ready for Kindergarten assessment.
Finish it fairly quickly because that's been the 2 minutes, so I'll let you finish.
Did you give him my part of the 2 minutes?
No.
Okay.
I gave you mine.
Okay. Yeah.
He got done early.
So I guess then, let me tell you, we're seeing significant results from that particular program. We've done a preschool program for four-year-old students in McMinnville School District, and likewise, in the written testimony you'll have before you, you will see that our students are 59% above the state average on letter sounds, those students who participated in a four-year-old preschool program. And in full-day kindergarten before the recession, we offered full-day kindergarten at our highest poverty school, which is 85% poverty, and the majority of students are Latino, and it has the highest number of our EL students. And we tracked the performance of those students on our third and fourth grade state assessments, and we found that the students were double-digit above their counterparts who did not attend a full-day program in the McMinnville School District with similar demographics. We have a number of extended opportunities for students, but I think what you should know about the district is this coming year of all of our students coming into the district, we'll receive 25% of our students from our Head Start program. And as you know, Head Start serves 200% of the poverty level. And in addition to that, we have a number of students that don't receive the benefit of Head Start who are also just above that 200% poverty line who will be coming to kindergarten for us next year. And in order for those students to be successful as they move through school, we believe a number of extended learning opportunities that we've already established will need to continue. Things like summer transition camp for kindergarten, first grade.
We're going to have to let it go, and you have to give it to us in writing.
So I'll wrap up by saying this. What I will say is it's really important that we adequately fund a variety of programs that will support the pre-K program through literacy, the 3-to-3, in addition to adequately fund K-12 if we're really going to make a difference in the outcome of our state for our children. So pre-K, kindergarten transition service, I'm really close here.
Okay.
Full-day kindergarten, universal pre-K for four-year-olds, child development instruction, coaching, resources for parents and disadvantaged students, and did I mention already, adequate K-12 funding.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bull. Any questions
for either of this?
Thanks. So next we will have Suwati. How do I pronounce the last name?
Adhikar.
Thank you. Thank you, Suwati. And Donna Schnitker?
Schnitker.
Schnitker. Okay. And also Jill Weber, if she's available as well. And 2 minutes goes by very quickly. Just so I remind and warn you one more time. Whoever wants to start, go ahead.
Sure. Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and committee members. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak. I am Swati Adarkar, president of the Children's Institute. We're focused on two important measures for student success, readiness at kindergarten and third grade. I think you've already heard a really clear articulation of why people are excited about the age 3 to grade 3 literacy initiative. I think what you've also heard is how important it is to build a bridge between the birth to 5 investment and what is being proposed in the age 3 to grade 3, because they go hand in hand. And, you know, at this point in time, we've got some serious issues in reaching kids before the age of 5. And we know the achievement gap is well entrenched by kindergarten. And so really, the challenge before you is how do we build a system that really starts to looking at getting more children under that tent with high-quality services. We have 75% of low-income kids in Oregon at 200% of the federal poverty level and below not receiving preschool currently. And so in addition to supporting age 3 to grade 3, the Children's Institute is prioritizing an expansion of preschool funding to see more of those low-income kids served through more kids getting off Head Start waiting lists with OPK Head Start, as well as putting on the ground a blueprint for mixed delivery preschool so that Oregon is actually competitive and doesn't lose the $15 million that we just lost in the federal preschool opportunity, and that we actually build a system for a mix of providers who deliver quality services, Head Start, childcare, schools. But we don't have a P20 system if we don't invest in preschool in addition to strong literacy. Thank you.
Thank you. Well done.
It's Donna Schnitker, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. I'll spell my last name for you. It's S-C-H-N-I-T-K-E-R.
Very good.
I am the Frontier Hub Director and also the Early Childhood Programs Director for Harney County and Harney ESD. And I am here to talk about the 3-to-3 literacy initiative, because we've been working on this in Harney County for quite a while. One of the things that we've recognized is that if you work with children at age 3, you're increasing their opportunities when they hit kindergarten. So at age 3, you're working on self-regulation. You're working on their ability to take turns, to stand in line, to sit in circle. At age 4, you're working on those academic skills that they need for kindergarten. So 2 years, we believe, is really critical. We also have a really strong relationship between the K-12 system, kindergarten. So we have been doing transition exercises with the kindergarten program for a long time. They include teachers from K coming down to the center and observing the classes, Head Start mostly, but I do have another preschool program for kids over income for Head Start, but the parents could not pay for preschool. Then we also have the kindergarten teachers come down and talk to the parents of the center about what it looks like for transition. In the spring, we go up to Slater, pair the kids up with a kindergartner. They visit the classroom. They do activities. The teachers meet with the kindergarten teachers or the parents and talk about kindergarten. And it makes a strong relationship. So the kids, when they go up there, really have a good idea of what happens when they go to kindergarten. So I really believe that this connection is...
That was fine. But anyway, finish...
Is great, and I really support this initiative.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator Roblin and committee. My name is Jill Weber, and I'm administrator in Roseburg School District. And I'm here to speak on about the 3-to-3 initiative as well, and let you know that Roseburg's doing some great work that we really feel has made a difference that really aligns with this as well. We have high poverty in Roseburg, and many of our schools are at or near 80% of our students coming in poverty, and they're coming in very below in skills where we want them to be successful. And we have a goal of getting 100% of our kids to be able to read by grade 3. So we are doing some things that are making a difference, and we've seen our students with high quality parent education and preschool programs in our district come in at twice the state average, which is a huge celebration for us. And we know when they come in strong, they're staying strong, and they're heading towards being strong readers in third grade. We've seen an increase in 15% of our students at grade 1 being able to read at grade level in the past few years with a push towards this program. So what we're doing is having a district preschool which targets our lowest learners. We also have parent education that starts before our parents even start school, so it's before the students come in to ensure that they're ready for kindergarten. We have partnerships with community-based organizations and other learning programs. And our evidence-based coordinated literacy program is really at the core of that. When you heard the MTSS program, Roseburg's been doing that for 10 years, and it works, and we're showing that it makes a difference. I believe that our students in Oregon and in Roseburg deserve this opportunity to be reading by grade 3, and using the strategies and being systematic about it will make a difference for our students. We've seen it work in Roseburg. We see that it's making a difference, and the data shows that closing this opportunity gap will make a difference, and I believe all of our students in Oregon deserve the same opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions, Ms. Group? Nope. Thank you. And thanks for both of you driving as far as you needed to get here. So we do appreciate that. Yeah. So next we have Beth from Oregon After School. And I'll let you give your last name since I was having a hard time making it out. So I apologize. For that. Chuck Bennett and Morgan Allen. I'm going to listen real carefully when he's
okay. Your last name. It's pretty easy.
Is it? Okay.
Okay. Great, thanks. So Chair Roblin and committee members, for the record, I'm Beth Unverzot. I'm the director of the statewide after school network. Unverzot, the Z-O-G.
Yeah, I got it now.
Got it. So, so the statewide network is part of a national collaborative. There are 48 states that do the work that I'm doing here in Oregon. We have partnerships with probably every state agency to do this work, and I'm here to speak in favor of 3-3. We believe this investment is critical because it recognizes the opportunity gap between low-income and high-income children, and it represents one of the most important yet not acknowledged causes of underachievement. National research combined with harrowing statistics that we just heard, which is 34% of our kids are not reading at third grade reading level. That's 14,000 kids. That's a lot of kids. So there's a growing body of national research that establishes the lack of access to expanded learning opportunities in after school and in the summer that is a contributing factor to the achievement gap. The research tells us that roughly two-thirds of ninth grade reading gaps between lower and higher income youth can be attributed to unequal access to after school and summer learning opportunities. We know that there is summer learning loss. It's acknowledged. So we are in support of 3-3. We believe that we need to have CBOs at the table in an authentic way, utilizing expanded learning opportunities. ELOs are offered through intentional partnership. ELOs are student-centered. They engage families. They are targeted, effective, affordable, and scalable. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chuck Bennett with the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Mr. Chairman, strongly but generally support the objectives of this bill. I want to just go to a couple of sections that are in the bill or in the proposed amendments to indicate where our concerns lie at this point. We believe that school districts should be added to Section 2 of the proposed amendments. We believe, frankly, school districts are the most qualified to provide these kind of literacy services, as well as we believe the fact that there are not CBOs at this point in all of the districts in the state, which would exclude certain districts from being able to participate in this. Ms. Chair, in Section 3, we are really concerned by the proposal that you cannot apply if you don't have full-day kindergarten at a time when the legislature is not funding full-day kindergarten. We just don't see how you can put the two together. We would ask that you take a look at this again in light of what the final funding levels look like and determine if you think the legislature has met its obligation to fund the promised funding of full-day kindergarten before cutting them off from early literacy programs, too. The other, Ms. Chairman, is we'd ask that any relationship involving anybody dealing with public funds include a clear statement of required transparency and budgetary process, as well as governance that guarantees the public a view of where their money is being spent, who's spending it, and who's accountable for those funds. We are concerned about that part of it, too. And I could go on, but my time is about up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Morgan Allen, on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association, we too are also generally supportive of the proposal and the goals. And we have seen the framework of the amendments, then they seem to make some pretty significant changes to the bill. And certainly we appreciate the removal of some of the requirements around full day kindergarten that were in the original draft being removed. But I think my comments generally are we learned some lessons during the current biennium about the strategic investments. And I think what we learned is that the details matter, especially when we're talking about competitive grants. So we want to make sure that there's an opportunity for all of our school districts and the community-based organizations that are within or close to those school districts to have an opportunity to sort of have a level playing field to access the funds. And I think that was something that wasn't 100% achieved during the current biennium for some of the competitive grants. And I'd echo a couple things Mr. Bennett said. We'd like to school districts to be able to apply for some of the extended learning grants, especially considering the base funding is barely adequate to provide a full school year, and the numbers we're looking at are going to cut days from school years in most districts. It doesn't make sense to cut the regular school year and then have your school district not be able to target the kids that need it most with summer learning programs. That doesn't make sense to us. And then just some of the comments about full-day kindergarten. Remember, we fully support full-day kindergarten. We think it should be mandated and that every district should do it and that the legislature should pay for it. That would solve the problem. But the reality is it's not a mandate, and there's not going to be adequate funding for all districts and other considerations to do that. So that should be something we think about in the process of the bill as well. So thank you.
Any questions? Seeing none, I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have Rebecca Roth and Joel Fisher. And if there's anybody else out there that wants to speak that hasn't signed up yet, please let me know.
Okay. Rebecca Roth, South Salem, Chair Roblin. I'm here because I have seen that government can't do anything until it takes the money away from those who are working. And so you're promising people all kinds of stuff and trying to expand government programs. And the first lady that spoke talked about the biggest growth in school is the illegal aliens coming over our borders. I went and heard a border agent talk about
said Hispanic students, and they are not necessarily.
Okay,
different.
We just had an amnesty where we have a border that's not stopping people, and there are people coming over our border. There are 7 billion people in this world, and the workers of Oregon are not responsible to educate everyone. And I went to the Healthy Children and Families presentation, and they said that they actually wanted to do a two-generation intervention, which means that they want to have people coming from the government coming into when a baby is born and evaluate the family.
And I am very against the government taking over that responsibility. The government is continuing to give itself responsibility in areas it was never designed to do, and to take money for things that you want to do for us and to us that have terrible outcomes. And I've seen this over and over in my lifetime, that the things that you promise have terrible outcomes, and we can't even speak into it because of, like what I spoke about with the Oregon Education Investment Board. What I want you to do is give the money to the parents in a voucher, like what's being done in areas where, like over in Washington, D.C., there's $23,000 spent per student. And when they give a voucher to the kids to go to private schools, it only takes $6,000 to send that child to a private school. And it's getting kids out of the ghetto, and parents are being empowered to send the child where they want to go. It doesn't have to be all top-down, government-sponsored alleviation of the whole world's problems.
Okay, thank you. And if you have written testimony, don't hesitate to turn that in as well.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher, here on behalf of the Oregon Business Association. The kindergarten third grade reading initiative is a top-tier issue for Oregon Business Association. We're here to urge your support for it. Reading, as you know, is the key to lifelong learning and a productive citizenry. And so with that, I'll give you some time.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Yes, Senator Cano.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joel.
Yes.
Based on current school funding and the proposals that are there, would you prefer us to fund this versus adding more to the school formula? Or did you want to sign on to my $8 billion ask right now? Or, you know, that's just a question. You can answer any way you want.
Chair Roblin, Senator Haas, I'd prefer not to answer the question.
And it's actually Canope. Not Haas.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Canope.
They look a lot alike.
We do look similar.
This is how far off base you've thrown me with that question.
One of you is just insulted, and I'm not sure which one.
Okay. Thank you very much for both of your testimony. Currently, that is the entire list. As you heard, we do have an amendment that's being worked on, and it's not ready today, so we will not be having a work session. It was only assigned for public. Is there anybody else that would like to speak to Senate Bill 214?
I'd like to speak again. I have more to say.
Sorry. Well, we'll talk to you. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
But with that, we're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 214. And we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill. Let's see, we've got about 20 minutes. We should get to Senate Bill 321. And with that, Senator Haas, do you want to go there? You want to sit here?
No. I'm fine up here as one of the sponsors of this bill. I just, you know, whenever we have legislation in the Capitol, the first question I always have is, okay, what is the problem we're trying to solve here? Well, one huge problem we have in education is a notoriously high rate of absenteeism. And we also have a notoriously low grade of high school graduation. Both of those subjects are very complicated subjects, but the research would suggest that there are some corollaries between absenteeism and low high school graduation. And so that's really the problem we are trying to fix here. Oregon has one of the highest school minimum age requirements in the nation. Students in 35 other states have lower ages and therefore are receiving two more years of schooling than our kids. So if you look at this, for every academic grade that a student lags behind in reading and mathematics, the rates of absenteeism and ultimate dropouts increase. And so for those reasons, and we have some experts lined up to speak on this, Senate Bill 321 seeks to lower the compulsory age from 7 to 5. And of course, the law maintains all of these exemptions for private schooling and for homeschooled children who are not. Bound by these limits proposed in this bill.
Okay. And with that, we'll have Rob Sexton and Karen Twain, please, come on up. And as we always do, we will allow you the time you need to set stage for us, and then we'll start the clock. So
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Rob Saxon, Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction. I'm here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 321. The first thing I want to make clear is that there's nothing about this bill that would interfere with homeschooling, and it creates no change to current homeschooling laws besides the need to register for homeschooling at age 5 instead of age 7 if you choose to homeschool your child. Currently, we talked about this earlier, 66% of third graders are reading at grade level by the end of third grade. And we've been calling what I talked about earlier today the age 3 to grade 3 literacy initiative, but we just as easily could call it the age 3 to age 8 literacy initiative. With a compulsory attendance law in the state of Oregon of 7, we might need to call it the age 7 to age 8 literacy initiative. And the truth of the matter is, we can't get to a higher percentage of our students being readers by the end of third grade if our compulsory age is 7, or at least certainly it is a serious impediment to that. For students who have disabilities, who do not show up at school until age 7, we know that the earlier that we can identify a disability, the more likely it is that we're able to overcome that or certainly work with it and to close the complications that come along with that. In fact, as you listen today to other people give testimony to this, I would want you to consider very carefully the testimony that is given, because I know that you'll hear some that's in favor and some that's opposed to lowering the compulsory age. But what you won't hear are from those who are not here, which are children who are in homes whose parents are not making sure that they get to school before age 7 and who have responsibilities actually to provide daycare at age 5 for their 3-year-old sibling and who don't get to school on time, and we're not going to hear from those people today. Their parents won't be here, and the children who are having to suffer that won't be here either. Too often it's our poor students and our students of color who don't attend school until our current compulsory age of age 7 and who are often living in conditions devoid of the learning opportunities we want students to experience. It's really an issue of equity, and we want to make sure our students who need it most are attending high-quality learning environments at first opportunity, and I want to encourage you to support this bill. I'd like to introduce Karen Twain.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karen Twain. I'm the Director of Literacy for the Oregon Department of Education. Previously, I've been a teacher, counselor, administrator in the Tigard-Tualatin School District, and I'm here to testify in favor of Senate Bill 321, lowering the compulsory age of school attendance from 7 to 5. As an educator for more than 30 years, I've come to realize how important a good start in kindergarten is for children. I've also done extensive research to see what are the best practices across the nation. There's a body of research to support kids being able to start kindergarten as 5-year-olds. The first resource is probably the best and most compelling. It's from the National Association for the Education of Young Children, a well-respected resource for those concerned about developmentally appropriate practice. NAEYC advocates that age is the most ethical and equitable way to determine kindergarten entry and that all children benefit from an appropriate kindergarten education. NAEYC says that delaying kindergarten entrance does not have beneficial effects on achievement, self-concept, or social development. In fact, contrary to popular belief, children whose entry into school has been delayed do not seem to gain an advantage socially. In fact, starting children later may be depriving the child of important opportunities for learning. Growy and DePerna in 2000 referred to it as theft of opportunity. What they said is that similar or greater progress might occur if the child were to enter school and receive stimulation, instruction, and intervention services. There is further research that supports the stance that rather than providing a boost to children's human capital development, delayed entry simply postpones learning and is likely not worth the long-term costs, especially among children from poorer families and those who have a few educational opportunities outside of the public school system. Waiting a year to start kindergarten means that these children are waiting a year to benefit, again, from stimulation, instruction, and intervention. The most recent research was done by the National Association of Early Childhood Specialists and State Departments of Education. That's a mouthful. But what they said in their Power of Kindergarten, the 10 policies that lead to positive child outcomes, they suggest that all children in the U.S. should be provided the opportunity to attend kindergarten if they are 5 by September 1st, and all schools should require all children to attend kindergarten when age eligible. In this research and policy statement, they say that children subjected to delayed entry disproportionately represent racial and linguistic minorities, low-income children, and males. Delayed entrance to school, blatant or subtle, increases the disparity between social classes and could be construed as a denial of a child's civil right. This is an equity problem. Beyond the research, I want to just speak to you quickly anecdotally about this issue. As a school principal, I used to talk to parents about the reasons that they didn't want their kids to come to school until they were 6 or 7. The reasons range from not thinking they were ready to having their 5 and 6-year-old stay home from school to help care for their younger siblings, or sometimes not going to school because it was just too much trouble for the parent to get them moving in the morning. These practices get young students started on the wrong foot in how they will feel about school and in the future. As you know, attendance patterns are established from the time children begin to go to any organized school setting. Further, as we put resources into full-day kindergarten and early learning in Oregon, we need the students who need this the most in those classes. When I've mentioned the possibility of lowering the compulsory age to 5 at the last 4 conferences I've spoken at and attended, I've been met with a standing ovation from K-12 and early learning teachers, administrators, and superintendents. The schools in our state are prepared, ready, and excited to welcome our 5-year-olds through their doors. So I highly suggest that Senate Bill 321 makes the research-based change to Oregon law to lower the age of compulsory education from 7 to 5, giving more of our youngest students the opportunity to begin learning so they don't begin first grade at a disadvantage. I urge Oregon to join the growing trend in the United States to lower the compulsory age to 5. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you. Question? Senator Cruz.
Yeah, and some comments. First of all, studies are interesting, and I would suggest a study done by early learning specialists that will have a predetermined outcome. I was part of the kindergarten work group when we decided to move to full day K. At that point in time, the decision we made was to keep the age of 7 because that was the age of first grade. But we also put in the legislation that once enrolled, they were required to attend. And part of the reason for that was simply not all kids develop at the same level. And I would suggest, Mr. Chair, for myself, because I was a mid-September baby, okay, and I probably could have benefited from one more year before school, not intellectually, but physically, because I was the smallest kid in the class and loved sports and was so, you know, there was a lot of self-esteem that might have been different, you know, if I had waited one more year. But, I mean, that was my parents' choice, and that's what we did, and I turned out almost normal, so I guess it's okay. I would, you know, for me, when I looked, okay, now we're going to full day K, I could probably live with 6 with mandatory attendance upon enrollment, just to give some flexibility to it. So,
Senator Bearsugar.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I've talked to, I understand the situation. I see it in my district. A lot of it revolves around poverty. No question about it. You know, and I've talked to lots of children groups, and the advice I give to all kids is every child should make a very good selection of parents. And the reason I say that, because I believe that, and I think we're missing a boat. We can, you know, we can teach kids all we want at school, but if they go home, if they don't have the support at home, that a lot of the work we do at school is lessened. It's not lost, but it's lessened. And I would like to see us make more attempts with parents, especially young parents. You'd be surprised of how many don't think that there's a responsibility that goes along with having kids. And somehow as a state, we've got to try to educate these young parents that there's a responsibility to have kids. You just don't have them and they raise themselves. Of course, you know, maybe 50 years ago you had enough kids, they do start raising themselves. But anyways, you know, I don't see how we can afford this. I know Senator Knopf has a bill to fund education more, and we're always struggling with funding. And I don't know if we need to be putting the money into bringing kids into school earlier, or if we should be putting money into trying to educate parents on how to be parents.
Chair Roblin, Senator Bearsugar, some really nice points for sure. I oftentimes contemplated, when does a person become responsible for their own destiny? At what age is it that it's on you instead of on somebody else? And that's a little bit of the question that I think we start to get into when we talk about parents. My biggest concern here is that kids don't get to choose. They just show up and they have a parent. And to disadvantage somebody who's fully capable of being anything that they would like to be, just sort of for who they are and how they show up, but that we disadvantage by 2 years because for some reason they did get the unlucky draw and they got the parent who doesn't make sure that they get to school, I think is just such a travesty for that individual. And then when do they get to have the opportunity for their own, to create their own self-destiny, when they actually start the race 2 years after everybody else has begun, and just how difficult that is. I also really worry sometimes that when we talk about developmental, how appropriate it is for me to show up at kindergarten, because it seems like maybe developmentally I'm not there yet. And really what's happened is we have a student with a learning disability that we don't identify for another 2 years, and they show up at age 7, and they have 2 more years of having that disability, never having it addressed, and never having an opportunity to begin to get the kind of instruction and support that it takes to make sure that that child has every opportunity, and that the longer that we wait to intervene when children have disabilities, the poorer their outcomes are going to be for them downstream. And so that just is, those are a couple of things that just really make this important for us.
And did you want to?
Just real quickly, I appreciate the opportunity. I completely agree with you around the parent piece of it. And in the 3-to-3 literacy initiative, which ties closely to this, there's a huge parent component working with families to make sure that schools and families are on the same page.
Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Superintendent Saxton knows what I'm about to ask. But just given that time, wouldn't it also make sense that we have faster evaluation periods for students that are suspected of disabilities, that we might do that within a month rather than right now having it take 5 or 6 months?
Chair Roland, Senator Gelsler, touche, very, very accurate. And the truth of the matter is, the faster we can get kids identified, the better. I would never argue with that. And so I think we both agree on that completely.
We might have a bill on that.
We do have a bill.
Oh. Any other questions? Yes, Senator Hess.
Thank you. Just kind of a technical question here. The current law phrase in this bill, in Section 1, is deleted. And I was just wondering, is that because it would be unnecessary then to begin? If you're 5 and you're currently enrolled, you'll have to stay enrolled. That doesn't mean.
Right.
But if it was, say, so that would only take place if the age was 6 or 7. Correct. Got you. Okay.
Yeah, unless we wanted to tell them they had to be in some place when they were 4. Right. Right. We're not.
That would help the house kids.
Okay, any other questions for these people? Thank you very much.
Very much.
And just a reminder, we are going to go to the clock now. Tanya Everest and Todd Robeson.
Chair Roblin and committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Tanya Everest. I'm the Assistant Superintendent of the Greater Albany Public School District, and I am here as an early childhood educator. My background is in early childhood education, and I have worked as a child development specialist, as a reading teacher. I've been a principal in 3 different districts, and now I'm the Assistant Superintendent. I have a lot of experience with young children. What I'd like to say is we are ready to help these young children, as diverse as they are. We're ready right now. And it is not a financial burden on us in our school district to help our children starting at age 5. I am here in support of decreasing the compulsory school age from 7 to 5. I really feel I'm here as a voice for young children who don't have an opportunity. And I'm also here, I can share some specific examples before I even get started. I have worked with many peers, principal peers, who also have actually counseled parents to not start their children because the parents have come in, maybe they're not behaviorally ready, and they've counseled them to start the next year, giving them a year to grow. And I, as the counterpoint, was the principal who took the children, who are as diverse as we can imagine. We have kindergarten kids who enter with skills as low as age 3, all the way to the age of with skills like a second grader who can read at a second grader. I'm telling you, we can take all of those children, and it's a moral imperative to me that we do. And so when those principals have changed their mind, because they have seen the difference that we can be ready and we can help children no matter how diverse they are. And research, so basically asking children not to start at 5, where it's in a way retaining kids. And retention, when you look at the research, shows significantly that.
Sorry, but two minutes is up. So.
Oh, already.
It does go quickly.
It goes quick.
Yeah.
It goes
quick.
But thank you.
Thank you.
And if you have any other written testimony, we'd love to have it.
And I have written testimony that you perhaps have already seen.
Okay, thanks. Okay.
All right. Chair Roblin and committee members, for the record, I'm Todd Robson, principal at Templeton Elementary School in the Tigard-Tualatin School District. I've been 24 years in the education business and 17 as an administrator. And as a teacher now, as an administrator, I've had the honor and privilege of advocating for and giving a voice to children through the teaching and learning process. And very excited next year to have the opportunity to open our doors for full-day kindergarten and offering that program to all of our students. When considering the bill, as a parent and as an educator, first and foremost, I always ask what's best for kids. And what I believe is best for kids is providing strong kindergarten programs for all students, coupled with law and policy that supports strong attendance. Current laws you mentioned allowing schools to intervene with truancy support for registered 5-year-olds in kindergarten is a positive step in holding parents accountable. Assuring that parents are giving their children the educational opportunity they deserve during the most critical developmental years up to and including age 5 is vital. Senate Bill 321 will be a voice and an avenue for all of our 5-year-olds to access their educational journey during the most critical developmental window of their lives. Secondly, best for kids is providing strong kindergarten programs with highly trained teachers who meet those uncaptured 5-year-olds and all of our 5-year-olds upon entry where they are academically and socially. Our task as schools is to be ready to guide, support, and instruct each child regardless of the skills or knowledge a child brings. And we know that there's a lot of diversity in terms of the skills that come through our schoolhouse doors. You know, research has indicated that holding children out deprives them of instruction, that regardless of age promotes learning of many skills. In developing appropriate kindergartens, children's age or maturity should make no difference.
And you're very close to the end.
Okay, thank you. Providing law that supports a school's efforts to advocate for students to attend on a regular and consistent basis, allowing them to access the many learning opportunities and experiences provided, is essential and is a powerful statement that early childhood education is a priority. And finally, Senate Bill 321 will provide law that lowers the age of compulsory education from 7 to 5 years of age, enforcing and acknowledging the research and evidence that fully supports meeting 5-year-olds where they are in their development and assuring that they can begin their educational journey without delay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And then, again, written testimony would be great.
And that's submitted, yes.
Any questions? Senator Hess.
I'm an alum of James Templeton Grade School.
Oh, and you
that's
see?
A weird check. There you go.
Go Tigers.
Probably weren't there at the same time, though.
I'm sure he wasn't even a gleam in some of the.
So next we have Brian Ray, thank you. Edmund Perejula, hope I got that right, and Abby Ray. This is Brian and Abby. Sorry. And I would expect after their testimony is done, we will be out of time today, and we will reschedule this for a public hearing to make sure everybody goes. We will keep our list and make sure that those people who are on the list get a chance to speak at the beginning of whatever the next meeting is at. So because we have a committee that comes in here right after we get done, so we have to move on. So go ahead.
Chair and others, thank you. My name is Brian Ray. I have a PhD in science education from Oregon State University, and I've written testimony, but I want to say a few things. One, you're going to hear about research, research, research. The macro picture is there is no base of research that supports earlier education in the long run benefits children into their adulthood. And I could give you synthesis after synthesis of research on this from the United States and Europe. Secondly, when you do something like this, if you pass 321, you take away from parents and families agency, which takes me to my next point. I am almost embarrassed to hear my fellow educators here. I'm a former professor of education, classroom teacher, certified teacher. And what I hear consistently coming from those who support this bill is not allowing people to have the opportunity. The message is we must force parents to do what we as the state say. That is not America. That's not in the Oregon Constitution. Each one of you has a worldview, and I have a worldview. You know, you might be a metaphysical naturalist. You might be an atheist, you might be a Christian, you might be a Buddhist, but you have a worldview. My challenge to you is, where is your moral authority to take from parents the authority to choose when and how to educate their children and give it to the government? You can't have your cake and eat it too. And I suggest you have no moral authority to take the choice from the parents. It's condescending, it's elitist, it's an 18th century Prussian. That's basically what we're getting into here. And you have no research evidence to support that it'll work, and it's a waste of money, secondly. But most importantly, the moral authority does not exist. You also will harm some children, because we all know that children develop at different rates. And finally, I'll say, because I know the beeper's going to go off, almost everybody who supports this bill has a total, absolute vested interest in money.
Amen.
For teachers, and I've been a certified teacher, and for the public school system, and it will affect negatively all of those in private education too. But most importantly, the moral authority question, and you have no authority to become the parent to the parents to try to train them, and you have no authority to become the parent to the children. They're not our children. They belong to the parents under the authority, depending on your worldview, of God.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. My name is Edmund Pieschawa. I live in Milwaukee, and I'm here on behalf of myself, as well as my wife, Sarah, and her parents, Gary and Martha Williams, who also live in Milwaukee and who couldn't be here today. I urge a no vote on this bill. As the father of five school-age children, I'd like to explain why this proposal is not a good thing for children. Everyone agrees that education is or should be a top priority for all concerned citizens, whether they are parents themselves or not. Some of the accepted wisdom regarding education in this country is the belief that more is better. If some time in a child's day is spent in a classroom, then more hours, and starting from an earlier age, must be better. Unfortunately, this position is not supported by either personal experience or scientific research. Experts studying the impact of early education throughout Europe have concluded that there are no lasting benefits to pressuring children into more formal, structured learning at earlier ages. Children in cultures with a later formal school age of 7, such as Scandinavia, have consistently superior academic results as well as higher levels of well-being in comparison to British children who begin their schooling as early as age 4. In fact, there is mounting evidence that actual harm can be visited on children by removing them from the low-key environment of home or less structured preschool and placing them in the higher pressure environment of a structured classroom before they are suitably developed. Researcher Peter Gray even attributes the increase of psychopathology in children, including rising rates of anxiety and depression, to less time devoted to free play, a phenomenon typical in modern Western cultures. Children, especially during the so-called preschool or kindergarten years, learn best by doing, by being free to move, to run about, and explore their surroundings. They don't do well being shut indoors, expected to contain their natural exuberance and curiosity while sitting complacently at a desk and performing free motor and reasoning tasks that are far beyond their developmental capabilities. Requiring children to attend school by age 5 also harms the so-called late bloomers. Boys in particular tend to lag behind girls in decoding and fine motor skills. These are not skills that can be forced on a child at a particular age, but must be fostered and encouraged by the many creative opportunities found in guided play or even free play, not the limited confines of a structured classroom. And I would like you to consider the example of Albert Einstein, who could not speak until after the age of 3. It seems these days that children
That's
in our
pretty
society,
much the time, so kind of wrap it up.
One paragraph. Thank you. It seems these days that children in our society are being forced to grow up much too fast. Five-year-olds may be very capable in many respects, but in others, they are still virtually babies. They desperately need the freedom to be just kids for a year or two longer. By allowing this, we can actually give them the gifts of imagination, self-confidence, and resiliency that will help them to excel later in school and in life. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin and committee members, I want to thank you for allowing me to address you regarding Senate Bill 321. My name is Abby Ray, and I've always lived in the Salem area. I believe that lowering the compelled school age to 5 is a bad idea for these three main reasons that I'll list. First, it violates the basic concepts of freedom in America and Oregon, and it takes away from the citizens and gives more power to the government. Second, it violates the words and spirit of the U.S. Constitution. The Constitution and other important documents of the United States show that parents have the primary responsibility and authority over the education and upbringing of their children, and the government does not. Senate Bill 321 would put the government in primary power over younger and younger children. This is another step towards complete government control of our lives. Third, if I were to have children someday, I would be offended and feel very disrespected and trampled upon by the government if it were to control the choices I would make for my children about when and how to educate them, if I chose to educate them at 5 years old or at 7. I request that you firmly oppose Senate Bill 321. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you for being here. Questions? Senator Hess.
Mr. Ray, where you said your PhD, what are your credentials?
PhD is Oregon State University, Master of Science in Zoology at Ohio University, and a Bachelor of Science at the University of Puget Sound.
Okay. I'm surprised that, if I may follow up,
yes,
there's plenty of research that suggests the longer students stay in education, the greater statistically their chances of success.
Well, I would like you to read my testimony. I just today refreshed 32 years of my review of research. That's what I do. I'm a researcher. I'm a methodologist. And this, it was amazing, he came up. Europe, the research is beyond Americans' research. And the studies, I could quote it for you, but essentially there's evidence that later is better. So we're very micro-focused here. We're out of it, research-wise, in Oregon and other places. I'm sorry, reviews of research.
If I may follow up.
If
we follow your logic, sir,
yes,
then why even have any mandatory age? Why 7? Why not just no school?
I'm glad you asked. It's a philosophical issue first, and then secondly, it's a pedagogical issue. Philosophically, it depends on your worldview. Okay, if you think that you are the final authority over children's education and lives, then of course, go ahead and have compulsory education. Why not 3 years old? Some states right now are pushing for 3 years old. And in case people think it's a slippery slope fallacy, it's not. Some states are pushing for 3 years old. So in other words, by the force of the state, we used to call that the sword, by the force of the state, you compel. I know you're rolling your eyes, but I'm sorry.
I'm rolling my eyes.
That's the force of the state. And so that's a philosophical issue. But research-wise, the question is there an effect? There's not. So that's why I asked you for moral authority for why you would take over the position of the parents rather than allow the parents to make the choice. The state can offer the education. That's what the Oregon Constitution says. But the Oregon Constitution never says force children to attend school. And so I challenge you both politically, theologically, and morally to question that. You know, you can make it available, but you shouldn't be forcing. That's what compulsory education
laws
do.
Well, we already do, sir.
I'm sorry?
We already do.
Well, then maybe we should reconsider that. Yeah, you brought it up. Let's reconsider it.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we do appreciate the testimony. We are past our time by 5 minutes. So we will keep the list, and we will have it available for people who are on it to be asked when we reschedule this for the next public hearing. So with that,
fun time.
Do you want anything else? Oh, I just saw you. I saw you moaning. So. Okay, with that, we will adjourn our Senate Education Committee. Thank you.
A wonderful hearing.
Two solid votes.